Hey everybody, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. I got two great subjects for you this week. First up, I'm going to talk about the two different views or perspectives on training. Are you looking at things from the outside in or from the inside out? And how this mindset can shape how you look at training and different things on the bike, like, you know, bike fit, you know, pedaling technique, you know, common riding advice. So, you know, hopefully this will give you guys a little bit better idea of where I'm coming from and kind of how my brain works when I'm, you know, dispensing some of this advice and why it seems to fly in the face of the more common advice, which comes from a different perspective than mine. And also up today, we have our top 10 mountain biking superfoods list. And this is a old blog post I had about 2 years ago. And I was looking through my blog and came across this and thought, man, this is a real good one. It's probably a few people haven't come across this list yet. So this is just my list. This isn't some, you know, endorsed thing from some nutrition expert, but I think it's pretty solid. So I wanted to share, you know, 10 of the foods that I usually have on hand and try to consume on a consistent basis and why I like them. And hopefully you guys will find something good out of that. So anyways, got a bunch to get to, so let's get to it. All right, for this week's training tip, I want to talk about something that I've been thinking a lot about lately, and you know, as I present my views of training and my thought process for training for the demands of mountain biking to the mountain biking world and the cycling world, I've come to realize that there's two ways of looking at training. There's two perspectives on it. And there's your more common one, which looks at things from the outside in, which basically looks at the bike and says the bike is a machine and we're the engine, you know, kind of like a car and motor analogy. The bike is the chassis and we're the motor. And so what we need to do is look at the bike and figure out how is it most mechanically efficient. And, you know, almost like it's this foreign thing. I've had a lot of people say to me, especially when I'm talking about my barefoot pedaling concept and how, you know, barefoot running, you know, the whole idea of restoring natural movement back to the foot being good for running will also apply to us as cyclists. I get a lot of people whose initial reaction is, well, cycling isn't running. And you know, they kind of dismiss what I'm saying because of that. And that's this common outside-in perspective in practice right there, which is that, well, you know, cycling, we're on a bike, so automatically it isn't running. You know, my perspective looks at things and says the body functions optimally in one way, all right? Every, you know, each movement pattern, you have a most efficient way to do it. And so what we need to do is look at how to apply that optimal movement to the bike. And, you know, same with running. Like, I don't look at running as this, you know, unique activity so much as how we are applying optimal movement to locomotion and locomotion with the legs specifically. And so if there's an optimal way to apply locomotion with the legs and we can apply it to running, then we should also be doing it to cycling. And so, you know, again, it kind of, you know, I tell you, I don't understand why I'm kind of the first person to start bringing this up and point out, you know, I'll tell you, I don't think I'm the smartest guy in the world. And why this, like, glaring, you know, an analogy, this glaring crossover between barefoot running and the barefoot pedaling thing that I'm proposing isn't more obvious to more people. You know, running got into trouble when it started to view the introduction of shoes as a foreign thing. And that meant that we needed to rethink our stride and how to run. And that's what led to this, you know, lengthen your stride and heel striking and all of these bad pieces of advice and running styles that have been allowed by the introduction of a quote unquote foreign thing. So we see the results in running from this mindset of, I'm going to look from the outside in, I'm going to look at the shoe And then I'm going to figure out, well, the shoe's got this big, nice, cushy heel. So what I'm going to do is tell the body to lengthen its stride longer than it normally would and strike heavy on the heel. You know, so that's not how we run. And that's what's wreaked a lot of havoc in the running community. And so, again, I don't – you know, that's why I don't understand why people don't see this mindset of you know, what we're using as a human being a foreign thing, and that makes us need to rethink how we move and how we apply that to the bike. So, you know, now with the running, we're coming back. The whole barefoot running concept is basically look at how the body moves and then adapt your equipment to it. And what we found is that, you know, with shoes is that we don't need the ridiculous padding and stuff like that and arch support when you look at how your body naturally moves and then adapt your equipment to it. And so I kind of think that's how we need to look at cycling. We need to look at things from the inside out. Look at your body, look at how it best moves and optimally moves, and then figure out how to apply that stuff to the bike. And so there's a couple examples of this in action. And one of the examples, the thing that really got me thinking about this and really started kind of making a few things click in my head when I was looking at the abstract for the Korff, K-O-R-F-F is how you spell the guy's last name, but the Korff study that I reference in my Clipless Pedals Myths special report. And in it, it showed that spinning circles and you know, doing what most riders are usually told, which is to, you want to pull up on the backstroke while pushing down on the downstroke. You want to create constant tension on the pedals, you know, spin in circles, pull through the top, whatever, however the advice is given, you know, that's, you know, this idea of like trying to spin circles and keep constant tension on there, you know, that was shown to be more mechanically efficient but less, or had worse gross efficiency. And that's the key. Like, that's what that means is, if you're looking at a machine and you're saying, how do I want to power a machine? Then you want to be having constant tension on those pedals. You know, if you're building a machine to power the bike, then that is what you would want to do. But the reality is when you try to make a machine, our bodies, do something that it's not supposed to, that it's not designed to do, it may be more mechanically efficient for the bike, but it's not as efficient for us. And so what they found with those studies, this is why the best cyclists in the world don't spin circles, is because it makes them less efficient. And so, you know, this, again, this is an idea of we're looking at the bike, and then we're looking at what's the most mechanically efficient way to pedal this bike. And we start saying, well, you know, spinning circles. If we were building a machine to power this bike, that's what we would do. And so, but that's the wrong way to look at it, because our bodies don't work that way. So that's an example of how this outside-in mindset can lead us in the wrong direction with our stuff. So that's why spinning circles is a myth, and we shouldn't be doing that. We should just be, you know, driving hard with the lead leg and having an almost passive return of the trail leg, which is a lot like running. Basically, that's how you run. You drive your lead leg hard into the ground. No one runs by trying to throw their knee hard up through the top. I mean, that's not how you power yourself forward. You drive hard with the lead leg. It's not a passive return, but it's not trying to actively contribute to the forward motion. You're just trying to get the trail leg back in a position so that it can drive into the ground. That's how you run efficiently, and that's what we're finding is how you pedal most efficiently. So that's what happens when you look at things from our bodies out. Another place where this kind of gets misused, or this outside-in mindset can be misapplied, is in bike fits. And again, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with a bike fit as long as you're not trying to cover up some, you know, issues on your end. So basically, I think that if you don't have at least twos on your functional movement screen with no asymmetries, you don't need to be messing around drastically with the cockpit of your bike, or you know, making a whole bunch of changes, because you don't know whether you're just trying to make up for a lack of mobility or stability in key areas with using the bike to prop you up in a bad, you know, in a position that might make you a little more mechanically efficient. But it's not going to, you know, those things wear out. That's why bike fits don't last long term. That's why, you know, you get one and it's not the last one you ever have to have, because eventually the underlying issues start to creep into that position as well. So, you know, make sure that you're addressing the person and how they move first before you start worrying about the bike fitting them. And obviously, you know, it's everything's got qualifying statements. You know, there are, you know, basic ranges for you know, for a good bike fit. You don't need someone who needs a, you know, a small bike riding a large. You know, that's obviously going to cause problems. But, you know, I'm just talking about changing, you know, like stem length, for example. For mountain biking, having a stem length over 60 millimeters will really start to affect your technical skills and your ability to navigate technical terrain on the trail. And so when you start lengthening your stem past that point, you know, because it feels more comfortable and it's easier on your back, then you're actually compromising your technical skills on the trail in order to make up for that lack of mobility or stability, whatever the issue may be in your hips. And so that's, you don't want to do that. You don't want to put yourself in a worse position on the trail where you can wreck or go over the handlebars simply because you didn't want to take the time to do some stretches and some basic core exercises to take care of these issues. So, you know, that's the order that it should be in, is from the inside out, not the outside in. And then lastly, last piece of example that I had for this is in the basic riding advice that we get, which is to sit down and only stand up when you have to. You know, standing up makes us tired. And again, if you're looking at, if I'm trying to ride this bike all day long forever, then yeah, that's what I'm going to do. But if you look at how the human body moves, I mean, you look at the posture that you're in when you're seated versus what most people would agree is good, healthy posture, that they are nowhere near related. And so you know, my advice to riders is to stand as much as possible and only sit down when you have to. And yeah, it's harder at first, but you get more efficient, you get stronger with your standing pedaling. You know, it's like anything else. You train it, you will get better at it. So, but in that way, you're able to get your spine straight, get your head stacked on top of your shoulders on top of your hips, really get your hips over your legs so that you can drive more efficiently with your legs and get your hips into it more, and just all the way around. You know, and that's the other thing, like with bike fits, you know, seat height doesn't matter as soon as you stand up. So with my advice, I tell you to stand up most of the time and only sit down when you have to, and definitely try to avoid a whole lot of sustained power moves in just a seated position. When you stand up, your legs naturally extend full length anyways. So, you know, one of the big things with bike fits is trying to get that seat height just perfect so that you've got, you know, just the right of almost extension. You know what? How about just stand up? And it'll take care of that. Your knees will extend how they need to extend. So, you know, that's, again, that's that outside in versus inside out thinking of how to go about riding the bike. And so, again, that's just my perspective, I've come to realize, is extremely unique. And, you know, it's a paradigm. Like, how you view the world is based on the information that you have. And, you know, up until recently, you know, the whole reason that I got into mountain bike training in the first place is because in looking for training stuff, I realized that the stuff out there wasn't like super high quality and it wasn't the best stuff possible. So, you know, up until I came along and started trying to introduce this stuff, most of the information out there was basically the bike is a machine and we need to figure out how to be most mechanically efficient with the bike. And what I'm saying is that we need to address movement first. We need to look at how we move and then figure out how to apply that better movement to the bike and look at things from the inside out and only, you know, make changes when we need to. When we make sure that we're not, you know, covering up movement issues or something like that. So anyways, I hope this makes sense, but I just realize as I'm talking to people and I get more and more of, you know, cycling isn't running or something along those lines, just realizing that people are looking at it wrong. You're looking at it from the bike into the body instead of from the body to the bike. So anyways, hopefully that kind of explains a little bit better where I'm coming from and why I feel that some of these training ideas that I have are a better way to go about it and just better for you as a human being. Again, I say it And I think people kind of, they don't realize that you have to really live this. We're not mountain bikers. We're human beings that mountain bike. You have to address the human being first and always be mindful of the human being and always be respectful of the human being. You don't want to compromise how the human being moves and works most efficiently for mountain biking. So, you know, only compromise when you have to. Obviously, you're going to have to on some levels. And, you know, we're going to have to sit down to pedal. We're going to be in bad postures, you know, all those things. But, you know, we just want to try to minimize it. So anyways, I don't want to keep rambling here. I'm going to wrap this up. So, again, hopefully this kind of clears up some of my viewpoints and how I look at training. And hopefully you guys have enjoyed this training tip. And I will talk to you in the next one. All right, everybody, for this podcast nutrition tip, I want to go over my top 10 mountain biking superfoods. And this is actually off of a blog post that I did. It's been probably been a couple years ago. But I was looking over my list, and I was looking at this, and I was like, man, some good stuff. So I wanted to share it with you guys through my podcast. So these aren't in any particular order here, but these are just, you know, 10 foods that you always want to have on hand and make sure that you're consuming on a regular basis. And so starting with number one, blueberries. Blueberries are great for all sorts of things, including brain function. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I can use all the help I can get in that area. So, you know, most of the blueberries that I personally get are frozen ones that I throw into my super shakes, my protein shakes that I make. But, you know, when the fresh ones are on sale, my wife will buy them, and, you know, me and my family love to eat them fresh as well. But blueberries are something that you definitely want to make sure that you are consuming on a regular basis. Number two is bananas. And bananas are great, but for a base in your protein shake. And, you know, bananas are a little sweet, and so, you know, they help add some sweetness and some texture to your smoothies. And so, you know, I actually don't like to eat bananas myself, just raw. I don't know, something about them just isn't the best. But, you know, throwing them in a smoothie works great. So I've always got them around for that. And since I think that, you know, those super shakes, the protein smoothies are such a vital part of, you know, a good consistent nutrition program, then having them around all the time will help with that. So number three on that on my list is whey protein. And whey protein should be pretty obvious. You know, protein is probably one of the hardest things for us to fit into our diet, just because carbs are so prevalent, especially, you know, processed, you know, nutrient poor carbs. And so, you know, using your whey protein and protein shakes is obviously one way to use it, but you can also use it to balance out a carb heavy, you know, meal. So instead of just having a bowl of cereal, you know, having a bowl of cereal and sprinkling some whey protein on it can kind of help balance that out from something that's really super carb heavy to being a little more balanced between the proteins and the carbs. So, you know, with whey protein, I've done a podcast on some protein tips, but, you know, whey protein isolate is the best and the highest quality. So that's what I, you know, personally try to look for. But, you know, whey protein concentrate isn't going to kill you if that's all you can get. So anyway, so some basic info there on whey protein. Number four on my list is kefir. And kefir is kind of like yogurt on steroids. It's got all the stuff that makes kefir or yogurt good. Kefir has more of it. So, you know, it's got 10 active cultures. It's great for the digestive system that way. You know, it's getting more and more popular. You can find it in pretty much any supermarket and or health food store now. So you can get different flavored kefir. You don't have to make it. When I first put this out, I had people looking online, and I guess you can make kefir yourself, but that's definitely not what I'm referring to. Unless you really want to, you can just buy it pre-made in the store, which is definitely what I do. Number five on this list is fish oil. And fish oil is one of those supplements, you know, if they could figure out how to make it sexy, you'd hear about it all the time, you know, but it's just not, it just doesn't sound as good as, like, you know, nitric oxide, you know, blood pump thing enhancers or all this stuff that gets all the all the press and stuff in the supplement world these days. But anyways, fish oil is hugely important. You know, I personally try to get at least 5 to 6 grams of fish oil a day. You know, you need it to maintain hormone levels, the nervous system, hair, skin, joints, you know, much more. I mean, just, you know, go to any like PubMed or some, you know, spot where you can get, you know, medical, you know, research study abstracts and type in fish oil and, you know, anything, any disease, anything you're looking to do. And you're going to find that fish oil has been linked to a lot of great stuff. So, anyways, I hope you're getting the point that you should be taking it. Now, here's the deal though. My tip, I use the fish oil. So I get lemon flavored fish oil, and that is what I will use in my protein smoothies. I don't like trying to take 5 or 6 pills a day. So, you know, a lot of people who are like, oh, I take fish oil. If you actually look at how much you're taking, you're not taking that much. If you're taking like 1 or 2 pills, that means you're probably taking like 1 or 2 grams. So check your label. If it says 1,000 milligrams, that's 1 gram. You need to be trying to get 6 grams a day. So if you're trying to take pills, it means you're going to need to be taking like 6 pills a day. So if you don't want to do that, then go ahead and get the fish oil. And you know, it sounds funky. I wouldn't have believed it myself until I tried it, but it does work, and you will, you know, it doesn't taste like fish oil. It gives it a nice little lemony flavor. So anyways, fish oil is on that list. Six is orange juice. I use orange juice for my pre and post, you know, workout drinks. You know, I like to use ProGrade Workout, you know, if I need something to just kind of take with me and mix up real easily. But, you know, I'll also use like a cup of orange juice and a half scoop of vanilla whey protein. And that makes a really good pre and post workout drink. And so I use orange juice in my you know, protein smoothies, my super shake recipes. So, you know, that's something that I like to have on hand. You know, you got antioxidants and vitamin C and all sorts of good stuff in orange juice. So, you know, you don't need to drink a ton of it because it, you know, is, you know, high in sugar. I know, please somebody don't point that out. That's why I'm recommending you use it for a pre and post workout drink, and not something that you just like slam all day long. But anyways, orange juice is something I like to have around on a consistent basis. Ground flaxseed is another one that is good to have. It makes a really great source of fiber, and the ground flax also binds to estrogenic compounds in the body. And in our world, we're constantly bombarded by this stuff, so you know, every little bit can help. So anyways, you know, extra fiber helping keep the estrogenic compounds out of my body, definitely a plus with that. Number 8 is avocados. And avocados are a really great source of healthy fats for us. And so, especially during the summer months, you know, when you're riding a lot and you're having trouble keeping weight on. I mean, I personally, you know, can lose like up to 10 pounds during the riding season. And, you know, I don't want to get too light because then you start losing strength. And so using avocados to kind of help give you some really calorie dense but also nutrient dense food in your diet will really help. And so and the healthy fats are always good for you. Number 9 is quinoa. And quinoa is a super grain of sorts. It's got a really low glycemic index, so it doesn't screw with blood sugar levels like, you know, refined grain products will, like your regular pastas will, and or breads. And so, and also, it's also a wheat and gluten free. So if you have an allergy to wheat or gluten, it's a good good thing to have on hand. And it's also the only grain in the world that has a complete protein, meaning that it has all the essential amino acids in it as well. So it's one of these things that, I mean, we always have quinoa around in the house. My wife makes it all the time. It tastes good. And yeah, so it's something that if you haven't checked it out yet, you definitely should. It's spelled with a Q, Q-U-I-N-O-A. So quinoa, check it out if you haven't already. And finally, number 10, lean red meat. And, you know, this is just my opinion. It's my list, so I get to put what I want on there. But, you know, red meat rocks. I mean, we have canine teeth for a reason, and that's because we are meant to eat meat. and you're going to get some CLA, which is a unique and powerful fatty acid in red meat. You know, you're going to get some saturated fat, which is not as bad for you as you think. This whole idea that we don't want to consume any saturated fat is just, you know, not true. So, you know, again, that's why we're talking lean red meat, and we don't need to, you know, eat a ton of it. But, you know, plus two, going into the riding season, I mean, what says summer more than, you know, wrapping up a sweet ride with some burgers and steaks on the barbecue? So, you know, that's my list. These are the 10 things that I like to have on hand and consume on a semi-regular basis. Like I said, the lean red meat, you know, please don't hammer me with, you know, how bad it is, because it's like everything else. It's all in how you use it. You can have too much water. It's called drowning. So, you know, don't tell me that lean red meat is just bad categorically, because that's just not true. So anyways, though, so that's my list there. You know, if you guys have other ones that you want to add, you know, feel free to come over to the blog at bikejames.com and, you know, post on this podcast what your favorite superfoods are that you like to have on hand. If I missed any, or you got an issue with anything that I got on here and you'd like to bring to light, certainly love a lively debate with that as well. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed this nutrition tip, and I will talk to you guys next time. All right, guys, well, that's going to do it for this edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Want to thank you for checking this out. As always, you can check me out on the web at bikejames.com. If you got any questions or comments about this podcast, that's where you can post them there. You can find more video demos and articles and things about how to ride harder, longer, with more confidence on the trail. Also want to remind you to check out my new membership site at mountainbikeworkouts.com. You're going to find the exclusive forum where I'm going to be answering all your questions about, you know, how to get better at mountain biking. You're going to find the 15-minute trail rider tune-ups, exclusive coaching cues. I've got a kettlebell clinic video series going. I also do a monthly teleseminar, live Q&A, where I'll answer your questions live about anything that has to do with mountain biking. So it's a great value for only $17 a month. You know, no obligation. You can quit anytime. So, you know, check it out, mountainbikeworkouts.com. And once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and bikejames.com. And I will talk to you guys in the next podcast.